talk just a little about the glass menagerie from the larger sense.
Sure. I think it's pretty widely agreed and understood that the characters in the glass menagerie reflect Tennessee Williams' own life, that his mother seems obvious once you do a little background checking on him. In our production, as in probably others, it seems to be a sort of a justification or a forgiveness memory play to for him to release these, I wouldn't say demons, but these little slices of guilt that he has, perhaps is another way to put it. And his response to his own memories is what's really fascinating, I think, about the writing, that he plays both a character and the person who remembers.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bring in all three of us here so that we can just start keep going with this discussion right here. Marianne McLaughlin as Amanda, the mother, in there, and then Nick Witham. Well, let's keep going kind of on this sense of plays, because I actually want to circle back around you to you, Nick, right now, because the parallel we have even from this year's season is Neil Simon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where Neil Simon also wrote to his family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there, A, there's that. B, there's the issue that when Tennessee Williams wrote this, he was starting out. He was fairly young.
Right.
And so even just following up what you were just saying, Patrick, there's that idea that when you're at that age, you have a certain view of your family because they've most recently hurt you or something. So having set up that, talk folks, about where we go from here and anything that implies.
Well, that's an interesting way to put it. Some of the parallels, for instance, is that Tennessee Williams moved from Columbus, Mississippi, I think when he was 12, to St. Louis, when his father was relocated to a shoe factory. And then he got a job working in that same shoe factory. So his father, in fact, never left the way that Tom Wingfield's father does. So when one wonders what the meaning is behind that, if this is a direct message to his family, how is that, what is the message there? You know, what I would have liked Dad to leave. Who knows what that is. But, excuse me, when Jim O'Connor enters the play, he's described at the very top in the dramatis personae as an ordinary guy, just a normal thing, which is a heck of a thing for any playwright to say. As it turns out, as the play progresses, you realize there's just as many levels and depths to Jim as there are to his family members. So there must be a message there, too. And I think that those question marks are left deliberately for the audience to fill in.
Well, when you say an ordinary guy, meaning that he doesn't have the specific psychological or otherwise problems of some of the other characters.
One would think that
would
at first.
Presume,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly right. And even in the narrative, Tom describes him as the most realistic character in the play, which is certainly ironic.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's keep going on this. So, Nick Witham, you're playing Jim. So, how do you respond to everything that just got said?
Well, agreed. Jim's character, what I find the most interesting and what we discovered throughout the rehearsal process was how much he related to Amanda, to the mother. Through exact lines of dialogue, through the verbiage, through the words they use.
Yes.
Even Jim himself represents sort of what Tom also says in the very beginning on his top monologue, that he's using the gentleman caller, Jim, as a symbol for everything that they hope for, that, you know, the dreams. And that's where Amanda lives, is in that hope and in those dreams. And so I feel like it's very true to what Tennessee Williams, is bookending the play with, is you know, this beacon of hope and this truth and not to give anything away in the play, but it ends truthfully optimistic. You know, I mean, in a sense of where Jim's coming from, and I'm only speak for Jim, but
that's also true of Amanda. I think in a parallel
yeah,
sense, that
yeah,
hope,
it really is.
There's hope once you discover this character who Amanda is, and particularly if I may say, the way Marianne is playing her.
Okay. Let's obviously get into the character of Amanda. Let's start out by describing her, whether by you or the others, in the worst possible way. What are Amanda's demons and Amanda's
obvious difficulties? Her demons are her history, where she came from. You know, she was kind of that belle in the Old South, and she has as much as all of those wonderful things, the wonderful history, the gentleman callers, all of those things are a part of her memories and so instilled in who she is, instilled in that, you know, her manners, the way she conducts things, the way she looks at the world, what she thinks is important. And as much as they're lovely and charming, her need to communicate that to her children, to have them in some way follow in her footsteps, understand how important these things are, when in fact they don't, because their world, they're living in a different world. You know, they're living in a place that is, it's not the Old South. It's a very...
Get a little more specific about the difficulties that Amanda is having to steer her family through. I mean, she's having a tough life, isn't she?
Yes. Her husband leaves. She's left to raise them. She's
them she's left to raise represents what kind of children?
Yes, with Tom and Laura. She refuses the amount of love that she pours on them. In some ways, this is what I was going to say, that is one of her demons. She loves them terribly, to the point of detriment, because what she's trying to put on them is something that they can't, you know, they can't fully understand. Laura, it's hard for her to imagine that she could have a child who is so introverted as Laura is. I mean, somebody who's afraid to deal with the world and go out and...
I absolutely agree. I think another way to put it is that Amanda has instructions, life instructions for how her children can develop their full potential, but she doesn't know who her children really are.
No.
She sees this projection of her
what
own
she wants them
her
to
own
be.
Life and what yeah, yeah what didn't happen for her, and that need and just by sort of forcing it, she can make that happen with them, and they're just not the kind of people that's suited for. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, in another way, she damages them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because of this.
By misunderstanding them.
Yes. Yeah. She thinks she works so hard to build them up, and she's thinking she's doing the right thing, you know. But in fact, it's the opposite in a lot of ways. You know, you can't help but feel, boy, if she just understood her daughter better, if she just understood her son better, if she just helped them, she's so strong, if she just helped them to find their potential.
Instead of fantasizing
some other potential onto them.
Right.
And so I think that's one of the tragedies of the play, you know. And it's a tragedy that we see a lot in...
Yeah, it's true.
In life,
that's why it's so striking.
Well, and that's a plot that's been used a fair amount in 20th century plays.
Absolutely.
I mean, whether Death of a Salesman or all kinds of things where, or maybe nearly every play I've seen, which, are you living the reality or the fantasy, and that sort of thing. I'll talk a little bit more about, therefore, the relationship between Jim and Amanda. So Jim is the outsider that is here, but then are you as a suitor to I mean, are you intending to be a suitor to Laura?
No.
You're cast in that position by Amanda.
Yeah, but very much so. Tom invites me over for dinner, and that's pretty much
Tom is the son, and you're Tom's buddy.
Tom has the intention to give his mother what she wants, is to bring a gentleman caller home, and he tells her, he's like, well, I didn't mention anything about Laura, you know, I just invited him over for dinner, and that's all Jim knows, And he walks in and
he walks into Oberoi.
Pretty much, you know, quite abruptly gets put into
a trap
and and a position that he's not really meant to fulfill, and caters to it, and very much, I feel, reflects off Amanda. You know, I think they work off each other. They play the parts in a way, I think, and I think it's another similarity between the two characters is. They're very adaptable to their atmosphere.
Jim's history, as told through Laura, earlier when Laura and Amanda have a scene together, is that Jim was the high school, I mean, he excelled in sports, debate, and everything. And yet here he is now, you know, working
in a shoe factory.
Working in a shoe factory.
Yeah.
So... But then he immediately goes into, you know, all of the things that he's going to do to improve himself. So that's what they have in common, is this need to improve, this need to move forward. And so for that reason, a lot of their dialogue, they use the same verbiage in their dialogue. And so it's very interesting, as we were going through the process, suddenly there was this parallel, you know, of these two people. And in fact, when he arrives, and it's even described in the script, when he arrives, you know, and she's in her gown that she wore, you know, that she led the cotillion in, and it's remade to fit her now, and she's, you know, you can imagine. He walks in, and as much as her son is sort of doesn't know quite how to take it at first, I think Jim is surprised, but then he embraces it. He sees that as, wow, look at her. You know, he can understand that. He can understand the need that she exhibits. And it comes out through the whole,
He's a modern sort of St. Louis boy, young man, and happily meets and embraces the Old South, and even toasts the Old South. And I think that that is important to Tennessee Williams' memory of this, that finally there's some kind of a blend that could happen.
We're just hearing from Patrick Treadway, who's directing Glass Menagerie, and earlier Marion McLaughlin, who plays Amanda in Glass Menagerie, and Nick Witham, who plays Jim O'Connor. Glass Menagerie, which opens officially on Friday and runs for 3 weeks. You have a scene, or at least a little representative sample of the play that you have. What are we thinking of?
Let me set it up just a little bit. This is when Jim and Amanda and Tom are seated at the table, have just had a lovely dinner, and before the scene starts, we find out that Jim has a nickname for Tom, which is Shakespeare, and that Tom has divulged to Jim that instead of paying the electric bill at the apartment, he has enlisted with the Merchant Marines.
Okay, so here we are, this scene from Glass Menagerie.
You know, Mr. O'Connor, I haven't had such a pleasant evening in a very long time.
Well, Mrs. Wingfield, let me give you a toast. Here's to the Old South.
The Old South.
Oh, hey, Mr. Lightbulb.
Where was Moses when the lights went out? Do you know the answer to that one, Mr. O'Connor?
No, ma'am. What's the answer to that one?
Well, I heard one answer, but it wasn't very nice. I thought you might know another one.
No, ma'am.
It's lucky I put those candles on the table. I just put them on for ornamentation, but it's nice when they prove useful, too.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, if one of you gentlemen can provide me with a match, we can have some illumination.
I can, ma'am.
Thank you.
Not at all, ma'am.
I guess it must be a burnt-out fuse. Mr. O'Connor, do you know anything about a burnt-out fuse?
I know a little bit about them, ma'am, but where's the fuse box?
Must you know that, too? Well, it's in the kitchen. Be careful. It's dark. Don't stumble over anything. Oh, my goodness, wouldn't it be awful if we lost him? Are you all right, Mr. O'Connor?
Yes, ma'am, I'm all right.
You know, electricity is a mysterious thing. The whole universe is mysterious to me. Wasn't it Benjamin Franklin who tied a key to a kite? I'd have liked to have seen that. He might have looked mighty silly. Some people say that science clears up all the mysteries for us.
In my opinion, they just keep on adding more. Haven't you found it yet?
Yes, ma'am. I found it all right. But them fuses look okay to me.
Tom, the light bill I gave you several days ago, the one I got the notice about, you didn't neglect it by any chance. Oh, you did. I might have known it.
Well, maybe Shakespeare wrote a poem on that light bill, Miss Winkle.
Well, maybe he did too, but I might have known better than to trust him. There's such a high price for negligence in this world today.
Maybe the poem will win a $10 prize.
Oh, well, we'll just have to spend the rest of the evening in the 19th century before Mr. Edison found that master lamp.
Candlelight is my favorite kind of light.
That shows you're romantic. But that's no excuse for Tom. However, I think it was very nice of them to let us finish our dinner before they plunged us into everlasting darkness. Tom, as a penalty for your carelessness, you can help me with the dishes.
Well, can I be of some help, ma'am?
Oh, no, I couldn't allow that.
Well, I ought to be good for something.
What did I hear?
I just said I ought to be good for something.
Oh, that's what I thought you said. Well, Laura's all by her lonesome out front. Maybe you'd like to keep her company? I can give you this lovely old candlestick for light. It used to be on the altar at the Church of the Heavenly Rest, but it was melted a little out of shape when the church burnt down. The church was struck by lightning one spring, and Gypsy Jones, who was holding a revival meeting in the church, said that the church was struck by lightning because the Episcopalians had started to have card parties right there in the church.
Is that so, ma'am?
I never say anything that isn't so.
Well, I beg your pardon.
I'd like Laura to have a little dandelion wine. Do you think you can hold them both?
Oh, I can try, ma'am.
Now, Tom, you get into your apron.
Scene, a wonderful scene between the mother and the unwilling suitor, if we want to call him that. The gentleman caller, there you go, of The Glass Menagerie by Tennessee Williams. Mary McLaughlin as the mother, Nick Witham as Jim O'Connor. Sorry, I keep calling you by the wrong guy. Anyway, of Glass Menagerie, which opens the soft opening tomorrow night and then opens for real on Friday. And the general formula is that it's Friday night, then two performances on Saturday, a Sunday afternoon matinee, and then Wednesday through Sunday of the following week with about the same, sequence, and then in the last week going up through Saturday night.
That's right. Can I give the phone number?
You may.
Thank you. It's 455-7529, and the theater is located at 174 South Howard.
And if you recognize 174 South Howard, for about 35 years, that's what we've been calling the address of Interplayers Theater, which is in transition, and now they still, unless they've changed it today, it still says Interplayers out front.
That's right.
And it's moving toward this new theatrical consortium called Modern Theater, Glass Menagerie. I can't just send you out the door right now because that was so amazing. Because the first thing that struck me about it was everything you described came out in that monologue of the relationship between the people and the ways that they talked a similar language and accommodated people and did and didn't and all of those things. Mm-hmm. So I guess I want you each to talk personally about taking on this role and what's happened in your life from it. Who wants to start? Go ahead, Nick.
Sure. with Jim. Jim's a fascinating character to step into for a lot of reasons. I mean, Tennessee Williams is a writer that I've never gotten to personally work with, for one, and the symbolism he puts into it, and like you had mentioned earlier with the monologue that Tom talks about Jim, about him being this, you know, the most realistic character, being this memory play about how true the other characters were written to be for Tennessee. So from that standpoint, it's a challenge that I've yet to ever work with. And then as the actor part, this character is someone I've really enjoyed stepping into. He's someone that I have, I think, an immense amount in common with. with how accommodating he is, with his with his, you know, passion to analyze people and to understand them and work with them and keep everyone at ease and a people pleaser and just really trying to find that ease and everything and I think it comes from a really good place and so it's been a really nice. I'm comfortable in this role. In a challenging way because it is personal, but also in a very artistic, free way where I've had a great time in rehearsals to be able to just sort of be and things let things happen, and that I think were very nourishing to the artist in me. And I'm thrilled to have the next 3 weeks with him.
Nice. And you, Marianne?
Oh boy, Amanda. I think I said once in rehearsal, I said, you know what? I don't think I would have been ready for her 10 years ago. I think you need. I think you really do. We talk so much in acting about life experience, and I think that you definitely need some life experience to tackle her. Of course, I have my own experiences with my family, and no way as extreme as this, but definitely things that I can draw on.
Families have stuff.
Absolutely. And she is just, I guess the biggest thing for me is that it was just a gift to be able to tackle a character that is so incredibly multifaceted by a playwright who is, you know, so amazing. I don't think he wastes a word. Everything
that was clear in the sequence you just did.
Everything is so poetic, and I love his writing. You know, and I think that speaks to the, you know, to me as a person. I love poetry, and when I hear it, it's just, you know, it takes me to those places. It's been absolutely a wonderful experience. I've known Patrick for years and years and years, and we have worked together a little bit, but to work with him as a director and his passion and his ability to communicate and to guide us and to let us find things and to help us find things has just been an absolutely wonderful experience. And it's funny, the last time I had anything to do with Tennessee Williams was when I directed The Night of the Iguana, and after that I thought, I'm not going to direct Tennessee Williams again for 10 more years. Because it was so much, but this has just been an absolutely lovely experience. So,
and I'm projecting that with the 15 performances or so that you have, you're never going to say, "Oh, do I have to show up and do this another time?" Because I expect that there's going to be constant discovery.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely!
Within the doing
of these roles is an actor's dream. I think
yeah,
we've all
really
agreed.
Is.
There's no bad role in this. And it occurred to me as you guys were talking that this justification play, memory play, I think was also intended to be a gift for his family, because Jim, it occurs to me, is what Amanda wants Tom to be.
Mm-hmm.
He's a jock.
Mm-hmm.
He's heterosexual. He's not a poet. He's probably, he doesn't have a drinking problem. You know, a number of things that Tennessee Williams just is not. And mm-hmm. I think he said, I can't do those things, but I can create one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, his gift for his mother.
Yeah.
In a certain way.
Yeah.
Nice. A few insights, more than a few insights, onto the Glass Menagerie, Tennessee Williams play. The soft opening tomorrow, the official opening Friday night at the theater formerly known as Interplayers runs through November 22nd, and one can go to the 455 PLAY. I'm old-fashioned,
yep.
I have to say it.
Use that rotary dial.
number. Oh, they have the letters on your cell phone too, and in order to find out more. And so, now they've combined the websites into The Modern Theater, so one can
right.
Google that.
Right.
So thank you, each of all of you, for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Very much.
Tennessee Williams coming along for 3 weeks.